Today's episode of the About Last Night podcast is brought to you by Gamefly.com. Gamefly has over 8,000 new releases and classic available games to rent from Xbox One, Xbox 360, PS4, PS3, PS Vita, Wii, Wii U, and 3DS, as well as the older systems. Now, as a Gamefly member, I can tell you that it's the easiest way to rent consoles or handheld games that you want delivered right to your mailbox for one low monthly fee. Gamefly also offers the ability to rent Blu-ray and DVD movies as a part of the regular service at no extra charge. If you want to start renting your games and movies the best way possible, go to Gamefly.com right now and sign up for a premium 30-day free trial. One game out specifically for viewers at the following URL, GameflyOffer.com/ALN, and get a free 30-day trial with Gamefly.com. All right? There's a lot of games out there, so why don't you make your life better and play them? And now enjoy a brand new episode of the About Last Night podcast with Brad Williams and Adam Ray. Happy Monday. Welcome to the About Last Night podcast. My name is Adam Ray. Thanks for listening. Wherever you get it, iPhone, Android, Stitcher, aboutlastnightpodcast.com, which a new website is coming shortly, so be on the lookout for that. I hope you guys had a great weekend. We got a great few weeks of shows coming up. Like today's, our guest is former mixed martial artist, former UFC fighter, former football player, professional, now a comedian, actor, and podcaster. You know him from his podcast, The Big Brown Breakdown, and Fighter and the Kid with Brian Callen. It's Brendan Schaub, baby. His first time on the ALN podcast, and what a fucking episode. His stories from his UFC days, his transition into comedy. It's one of my favorite episodes we've done so far because it's a world that I have no knowledge about, and now I feel like I know really well and I'm terrified of after this enlightening conversation. Brennan's a hilarious dude, a great dude, a big dude, and he's a sweet addition to the stand-up comedy family, which he's, you know, as you'll hear, he's before he did this episode, when he did this episode, he was about to embark on a sold-out tour through Australia. Sold out. 2 years into comedy, sold out. So he's crushing the game, and he deserves all the success. He's a great dude. So enjoy the hell out of this episode, and follow Brendan on Twitter at Brendan Schaub, S-C-H-A-U-B. Follow me on Twitter at Adam Ray Comedy, at Funny Brad, at ALN Podcast, at ALN Podcast on Instagram, Adam Ray Comedy on Instagram, Brad Williams Comic on Instagram. This weekend, no road for me until the end of June, June 29th to July 1st. I'm going to be at the Parlor Live back home in Seattle, Washington. ParlorLive.com or AdamRayTV.com for tickets. And also right before that, June 23rd, I'm going to be in Boston at the House of Blues for the Big Poppy Roast. I'm going to do the roast of Big Poppy, the Boston Red Sox and future Hall of Famer. It's me, Josh Wolf, Sarah Tiana, Bill Burr, Lenny Clark, Rob Gronkowski, Dustin Pedroia, Jonathan Coachman. It's going to be at the House of Blues in Boston June 23rd. All the proceeds go to charity, so come out and see. I'm gonna do it as a character, as a New York Yankees fan, and I've been writing a bunch of jokes. I've been getting together with Frank Castillo and Mark Saratella, writing some roast jokes. It's gonna be a blast. So, June 23rd, House of Blues in Boston, roast a Big Poppy. June 29th through July 1st, Adam Ray at the Parlor Live, hometown show, Seattle, Washington. So come out and see me there. Brad Williams is on the road a bunch, of course, as always. And this weekend, you can see Brad in West Palm Beach at the Palm Beach Improv in Palm Beach, Florida. June 15th through the 18th. Get your tickets at bradwilliamscomedy.com. Like I said, new website coming, so be on the lookout for that. And keep subscribed. Tell your friends. 5-star ratings. Comment on the iTunes page. Helps us climb the charts. And again, shoot us an email, aboutlastnightpod@gmail.com, with your favorite ALN memory, highlight from a show you liked, where you listened to the pod, how you got into that. And we're going to read some of these comments in the next few eps and give you some free merch. So now that we got the tour dates out of the way, the Twitter handles, the merch info, sit back, relax, and enjoy a brand new episode of the About Last Night podcast with the one and only Brendan Schaub.
Well, the weekend's over, so it's time to chat about it. Got a midget and a Jew, so why don't you sit down and listen to our dope podcast during lunch, dinner, or breakfast. It's about last night.
live here full time.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I'm
I'm
down the street. I will not give out the exact address because I think we're recording.
Don't do it.
And not even for my own safety, for the safety of others. Because it's like people are like, oh man, like you're gonna protect your girl. I'm like, hell no, she protects me. She's fourth degree black belt in Taekwondo.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, so it's like, you better hope she's not home.
Hey, you've really set the bar. I've only been in a handful of fights, but not like enough. And not enough went down for me to go the I feel like any dude with enough competitive adrenaline in them goes with, even without the experience that like you have, goes when push comes to shove, if it's like family, you lights go down and you just probably you jump in, right?
You hope so.
I would think so. Exactly. You hope so. I don't fucking know.
Yeah.
But I mean, you know, I got involved in some of these fights for like the most mundane reasons. So I would like to think if there was actual stakes involved, I would go pedal to the metal, but that being said, I think I need to go the Brad Williams route and get a fucking at least a purple belt in Taekwondo.
Something.
I was a white belt in Taekwondo.
I'll find you
10.
A blue belt, bro. Let's not get crazy.
Yeah. There you go.
What's crazy is like guys talk about it all the time where they're like, oh, I hope I pass the test if I get put in those high pressure situations.
Mm-hmm.
I've spoken to Navy SEALs. We've had them on our shows, Andy Sumpf, Tim Kennedy, who's not a Navy SEAL but Army Ranger, and he's saying a lot of times you're talking about the baddest of the bad.
Yeah.
And they put them in these high pressure situations and training, you know, the bud strength camp and all that, and they're killing it, but it's not real. They're like, this is easy. I'm fucking killing it. Then they get put in the actual situation. He says some guys just freeze up. Like,
no,
these are trained killers.
Yeah.
And some just.
So it doesn't even matter. Like
shit hits the fan.
Yeah. So it doesn't even matter if you have the necessarily training or the skill. Like sure, but then there could be just something else in you that goes.
It's the X factor.
I'm frozen.
But it's the same thing with sports. Like I've seen some guys in the training room. Like holy fuck, he's been a 20-time world champion. Like no one's gonna beat him. He's beating all our asses, and we're ranked in the top 10. This guy's beating the shit out of us. Then when the bullets are flying, it's real. He turns into Jane instead of Tarzan.
I don't know how anyone, because like as a comic, the worst thing that can happen to us is someone doesn't laugh or we get booed or we get heckled.
That's terrible, though.
It sucks, don't get me wrong, but it's not like when you're a fighter, you pretty much know every time you go into that ring, octagon, whatever, I'm going to get punched in the face. Like, that's going to happen to me.
Yeah,
but,
do you?
Well, yeah. You expect. It's like Phelps being, you know, mad he's going to get wet. Like, you know you're going to punch in the face. You know what I'm saying?
But, by the way, that would be great if that was like a real.
Phelps like, what the fuck?
I'm wet again?
He's like, look, I want to be the best, but this water thing is really throwing a giant curveball
really
my way.
Getting on my nerves. No, but in fighting, like, I assume, you know, but what the difference between fighting and comedy is, when you go into the octagon, you're fighting another world-class fighter. So if you lose, it's not like the public's like, I could beat that guy. Like, everyone's like, damn, dude, that was rough. Like, I can't believe you even did that.
Right.
With stand-up, if you're up there bombing, and let's say the first 2 minutes, whatever, it's a Tuesday night at the Laugh Factory, it's Armenian night, which I've had, and no one's laughing, you got to power through it.
Yeah.
It is so degrading and just the worst.
Yeah. Wow. See, that's amazing to me that, I mean, you're a guy that has had success in now both these areas, and you're the one that goes like, oh man, no, getting punched in the face, that's easy. Stand up. That's some hard shit.
So much harder because it's all on you, and it's your creative mind that has to relate to these masses amounts of people. Like fighting, you could be from the Czech Republic, I could be from Armenia, it doesn't matter. We all get fighting. Everyone understands fighting.
Yeah.
And it's scary, it's only getting punched in the face. Stand up is such a like a right hand's a right hand. Your right hand's same as my right hand, really.
Well, I mean,
well,
look at your right hand.
That's a bad example.
Here it is. Your right leg is Brad's right hand.
it's like, getting hit with a bowling ball is the same as a ping pong ball. Like, that's pretty much the comparison you just made.
Like, throwing a right hand is throwing a right hand, and everyone's like, we all understand that. But comedy, it's like, they might love Adam's comedy and fucking hate. It's their cup of tea, you know?
Yeah.
It's tough, man.
So you've
met Brad's parents.
So how does the rush of, let's say, a great set compared to the rush of walking into that arena and knocking out Mirko Krokop? Is it the arenas, like, you can never compare, or how does it compare to each other?
It's almost apples to avocados. Like, it's so fucking different, but in comedy, it's all you. Like, especially like these Big Brown Breakdown lives that I do, which is basically
yes,
you know,
45
minutes of stand up. Yeah, which is 45 minutes stand up, and then I do current events and MMA, and then open like improv dialogue with the crowd, stuff like that.
It's awesome.
That's all. Like, that's all planned, and that's all on me. It's my creativity, and I love it. I'm obsessed with it. In fighting, I was so scared. I was so fucking terrified. And it's not like the UFC is the brand. Like, like, I hate to refer to myself in third person, or don't have to. Let's say Conor McGregor. He's not the brand. He's his own identity. But the UFC keeps on marching.
Yeah.
Well, in stand-up, like, you control your destiny. Fighting, you really don't. You
know? Really?
So I get so much more out of this because you feel like you're making a smart investment. In fighting, name a fighter who's retired. There might be a few, but who are killing it now. I can do stand-up to 75, 80, hopefully.
Yeah, I mean,
CT might kick him. Who knows?
Yeah. Oh, my God.
But well, but with fighters, it's just like it's a different investment. It's just and also, I don't care what they say. Everyone's scared to fight, so it's just like you go in there and you're hoping for the best, and it's such, and you know, it's terrifying. But like when I fought Crow Cop, I won that fight. Did I win? Actually, win though in life? Like, he made more money. I had reconstructive nose surgery twice from it. I had 18 stitches in my eyebrow. I was concussed. I stayed up the entire night throwing up. The light from a cell phone, I couldn't handle my eyes because of the concussion. Had to get on the plane. Did I win or did we both lose? You know?
Wow.
In stand up, you might have a set at the Laugh Factory. You might have a show wherever. Brad, you might have a show.
Yeah.
You crush, I crush. I would say we all three win there. In fighting, does anyone really win? And I looked at Crocop and went, what the fuck are we? And he was my hero. And we're both sitting there, all blood, both bloody as fuck. And the commission's coming in. They give us my check and they give him his check. And I'm shaking my head. And I've always kind of felt like, so I look at him and go, God, what the fuck are we doing, man?
Was this Was this the last fight you had that was?
No, that kind of started. Okay. Like, just because he was my hero, and that, you know, I won three big fights in a row to get that fight, and then that was like this marquee fight. I knocked him out, and that was John Jones' first title shot. Like, it was a huge card in Newark, New Jersey, big deal. UFC 128, I think, and I knocked him out. I was supposed to be all happy. I was not happy. I was in the back, and I thought this was my dream. And I'm not a natural born fighter.
And you won.
Latest knockout ever in UFC heavyweight history against a legend. Yeah. I got the bonus next year, $100,000.
So you won the Super Bowl. I mean,
you would think
you should be elated. You should just be sitting back there. I mean, celebrating.
Yeah, I looked at Krokop. And his English isn't great. He's from Croatia, and he's a natural born fighter. He's one of the best of all time. Maybe the best striker ever.
He's a damn cyborg.
He's like the Tony Kukoc of fighting. Yeah,
100%. Sure.
Also a Croatian.
Yeah, kind of.
If Tony Kukoc could deliver devastating leg kicks.
Kind of. And I just looked at him and went, "What the fuck are we doing, man?"
Yeah.
And just in his broken English goes, "This is life. This is life."
And wow.
Is it though?
Yeah. Right. Like, does it have to be? Do I have to feel this bad after I just had the greatest win of my career? Like, that has to be a mind fuck because you said, you're supposed to be elated. You're supposed to be out partying, chicks, everything like that. And then you're just sitting there like second guessing every decision you've ever made to get to that.
Well, had you ever had like a plan B or any other aspirations, or was this just like, at what point were you on the path of?
Not then, because once I'm in, I'm fully in. So with football, I was all the way in.
Yeah,
like football was my shit. I was all the way in. I go to Buffalo. I have a cappuccino. Like, we're all set, white boy. So I get back on a plane, and then from there, like, I got to figure something else out.
Because you were on the Bills practice squad.
Yeah,
and you were a big time dude at University of Colorado.
Yeah,
yeah. And then, I'm sorry, what position?
Tight end
for
like
sure.
H-back.
Yeah, come on.
Okay,
probably crushed.
Yeah, I wouldn't say crushed. I'd literally the best tight end in the nation playing in front of me. So I'd go between H-back and fullbacks because he was just a ridiculous best friend, by the way.
But yeah,
just a ridiculous athlete. So I wouldn't say I crushed, but I did well. But and then the dream was to get to the NFL, and then, you know, I get an invitation to go to the Buffalo Bills, and I get there, and it just wasn't going to work out. And I've always, you know, to my dad's credit or whoever's, I've always been a cerebral guy. Like, always thought a lot of things through.
Yeah.
And some people might say I'm a smart guy. And I was sitting there in Buffalo, and I'm seeing other guys on the practice squad that have been there for 4 years. And you think in the NFL, you know, everyone's balling. There's Bentleys and Rolexes. Mm-hmm. Well, if you're on the practice squad, you're making maybe 45,000, 70,000. You know, there's those guys who bounce around.
And you're just waiting for your shot.
You have 4 years. Yeah. You have four. You can only do that, I think, for it's 4 years or 3 years now. You have 3 years on the practice squad, and then if you don't make a team, you're out. You can't do that shit anymore. So I see these guys in the last year, and like, God, hopefully I make it. I'm like, oh my God, I don't want that life. And right. they're like, do I really have the skills to be a Jeremy Shockey or fucking Tony Gonzalez? Like, I'm a realist. And I was like, probably not, man. So that's when I was like, this dream's over. And then on to the next thing.
What did you love about football? What did you get from that experience that you took on to the next chapter?
The work ethic.
Yeah.
Because that's how I stood out. You know, I wasn't the biggest, fastest guy. I was good. I was good at everything. But my work ethic is what separated me from everyone. So I was like, man, if I work my ass off, I can get a little ahead of these other dudes.
Mm-hmm. Is it real serious and competitive in that like that world? Or is there room for you to like... And I'm also curious, like, at what point did you start to, like, find, like, the comedy side of Brendan Schaub? Like, were you a joker on the practice squad, or were you just, like, all business?
Well, since I was – no, my issue with that was I wasn't all business. Yeah. Like, since I was a kid, like, my heroes were Adam Sandler, Jim Carrey. Like, I love that stuff. Never missed Saturday Night Live. Like, my mom grew up Saturday Night Live.
Wow.
And then I remember my mom, when I was in college at CU, she goes, I don't know why you just don't go to Hollywood and just try that entertainment stuff out. Literally, I'm a sophomore. I'm like, that's a terrible idea. Yeah. So to my mom's credit, she always thought I would do something like this. But I was always the funny guy in the locker room. Like, I was the guy always telling stories. People asked me to tell stories.
Yeah.
I was that guy, man. Mm-hmm. So,
but you never thought of it as anything. It was just like, oh, cool, I'm the funny jock. Like, I'm not...
I'm the funny jock, and also in Denver, Colorado, there's no pathway. Like, I saw Jim Carrey doing stand-up. Like, I can't do that shit. Look how dynamic he is. I'm this... brute.
And you know,
it was a blessing and a curse, because the blessing was, you know, I grew up in predominantly African-American neighborhood, so athletics were the way to stick out. So I was the biggest, fastest white kid who was really good at sports, who brought his cleats to school so at recess he could dominate and get the chicks. Like, that was me.
What?
That's what brought your cleats?
You were the recess king?
Oh, yeah.
I think I've read about you.
Yeah, yeah. That's me, amigo.
RK?
Yeah. RK? Yeah.
Recess king. Wait a minute. King. What was your game? What was you? What
Football. Everyone make fun of me because I'd wear McGregor molded cleats into class. It was the only shoes I had, and they would clunk on the ground, and people would laugh. I'm like, wait to recess, motherfucker. Then recess.
That clunk's going to be a lot more intimidating. Yeah. And you were prepared.
Fuck yeah.
Oh,
laugh it
that's
up.
Funny.
And my mom loved it because those cleats, you know, you wear them so much, they'd turn into regular shoes like three, 4 months later.
Grind them down,
Mom's like, shit, we buy shoes once a year.
So you were just girls would just come. Was it one of those things where the games were so big and fun that girls would just kind of lean along the fence and like watch and be like,
get him, Brendan.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, but it's like, get him, white boy.
Yeah. Yeah. Shit. Yeah. How predominantly black?
I'd say 60% at least.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you really stood out in the field then.
Yeah, I stood out, and I learned at a young age, like, man, sports, this is how you get attention. This is going to lead you somewhere. That was my avenue. I was the big, fast white kid.
It is tough, too. I was the same way where it was, like, all sports, and I was, like, the funny guy on all the sports teams, you know? But, again, with no frame of reference and being in Seattle and probably similar to Colorado where it's, like, you know, Brad, I think you, growing up a little closer to the business, maybe it seemed a little more real, but also probably – You're still an hour away.
I just knew I wasn't going to get into sports. Like,
wasn't an option.
Yeah. I was good until 10. And then once 10 hit, like, oh, wait, everyone else keeps growing?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. That sucks. Yeah, yeah, yeah. What the hell?
Yeah. No NBA for you.
Yeah. No NBA. Like, yeah. Like, I would look like a Muggsy Bogues or a Spud Webb.
That was
be like, well, they're 5'3", 5'4".
Yeah.
And then I'd go to my parents, like, I'm going to make it that high, right? Yeah. And they're like, nope.
Why not?
That's not going to happen. 4'6" at the max. But were you always a bigger guy? Were you always like, or
no?
No.
No.
Did you hit the growth spurt late?
And thank God, because that's where I think the personality comes from.
Yeah.
If you've met a really big guy, he's been the, you know, like LeBron James don't have the best personality in the world. I don't know if you met a lot of these fighters who are dominating. Like Cain Velasquez is about as fun as that candle burning right there. Like, he's a phenomenal fighter.
In that candle's defense, it's been burning for about 3 days, and I thought it would only last for one. It's in true Jew fashion. This candle is lasting longer than it's last.
You know what I'm saying? Like, you meet these supreme athletes, like most of the time, they don't have the best personality because
97% of the time.
Hot chicks. They usually don't have the best personality. They don't don't have to create a personality. Because
they've been hot their whole life. Yeah. Now,
everything's given them.
Yeah, me. What you want is you want like the ugly duckling that was like fat until like mid high school, yeah. and then all of a sudden got hot.
Yep.
That's what you want. Yeah, that's what you want.
Yeah, with me, no, I was always the small kid. I played with the older kids. I had an older brother, and they'd always pick me because I was the most athletic, but I was always small. Always mm-hmm. small till really maybe senior in high school. You know, you guys are going to laugh at this, but for a Division I player, I was 6'2", 175 pounds trying to play tight end. Well, I was super small, man. Well, I didn't get big till my sophomore year of college.
But that's like thin. Like
super, that's small.
As tight end, that's crazy. I was what, 6'1", 190 trying to be an offensive lineman again, like senior year against these fucking like 280, yeah. like...
Yeah.
So, I mean, as a tight end, I can't even imagine you trying to compete at that
super
size.
Small. Yeah, I was a late bloomer, but thank God, man. Because you have to, you know, you got to develop personality.
That growth spurt must have been a fucking front page headline. I mean, dude, I can't imagine, like, because you're now what,
6'4", 240 pounds right now.
Dude, I mean, when, it wasn't all in like one summer, or was it?
Yeah, I mean, it was close. I went from, you know, that 6'2", 175, 180 to about 6'4", 220 5 pounds, pretty fast.
Jeez, just like over the summers, and you show up,
you just blew up.
The next year in September, like, all right, white boy's back.
Yeah, what's up?
Everyone's like, dude, Recess King is fucking like legitimately the size of a king now. Like, he grew real king muscles.
Yeah, it was weird, man. I've been in the gym since I was fifth grade. Like, I was obsessed with lifting weights. And
who got that on your head? Older brother?
No, not at all. I got him into it.
Mr. T videos?
Jean-Claude Van Damme.
Yeah, dude. Yeah, Bloodsport.
Bloodsport.
Yeah. You just saw the way they looked, and you're like, oh, that looks great.
Yeah, I'm like, I just want to, you know, I want to be in shape, man. So yeah. I was just, mm-hmm. I don't know. I was always drunk.
Wait, fifth grade weights? Isn't that like, they say that you're supposed to stunt your growth. So yeah, I guess you are a prime example.
Brad, did you lift weights?
So many weights.
Because I did.
So many weights. See, that's my problem. That's what I tell everyone. I was jacked, but then it like shrunk me down. So I just started curling 100-pound doll.
Yeah, I hear you, man. I don't know what the hell happened.
Once it's become obvious to you that it's not going to happen.
The NFL?
Yeah. Like, you see all these stories about guys, like, having two-year careers, and then it's like, well, now, like, they're bagging groceries the next year. Like, what's in your head going, well, now what do I do?
I think all of it stems from a lot of heartbreak, man, if I'm being honest. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, as a kid, the NFL's the dream, and you get there and you think it's going to be Charlie and Chocolate Factory and like this heaven, and it's going to be amazing. Your jersey's going to be hung up. And no, man, I was just a guy. I was just, it was such a business when I got there. It's X's and O's and plug and play, and it's really not a team atmosphere. And mm-hmm. it was just very intense for me. I'm a sensitive dude. And I was like, holy fuck.
Was the fun a little stripped out of
it? Fun was gone. Fun started to leave last. Like a few games my senior year. So that took the fun out of it. So like I said, a lot of heartbreak. And I was like, we got to figure something out here, man. And then I started doing jiu-jitsu in summer, my senior year in college. There was Eastern Jiu-Jitsu in Boulder. Started to do some classes. And one of the instructors was like, man, you're picking us up freaking fast, man. Like, you could be a beast if you decide to do this. I'm like, mm-hmm. I've always wanted to fight, man. He's like, who knows? So that kind of put a little seed in there.
Yeah.
And lack of options.
Yeah. Now, at that time, when you start doing jiu-jitsu and they start saying, like, hey, you got something here, was, like, because I'm trying to think of the time frame, because was the UFC what it is now, or was it still in the days when it was, like, 200-pound guys fighting 110-pound guys, like, when there was no weight classes, and it was just Hoist Gracie walking to the ring in his gi?
It was big, but it wasn't like it is now. It was good. Like, okay. Ultimate Fighter had to happen, and
okay.
You know, there's things starting to come about. Like,
people knew who Ken Shamrock was.
Yeah, yeah. And I knew that with my athletic ability, I looked at the other heavyweights and went, man, if I commit to this, I could get good pretty fast and beat a lot of these guys probably. The thing that I've had, whether it's hurt me or helped me, is I've always had so much self-belief where if mm-hmm. I commit to something, I can do pretty well in it.
Hey, ignorance is bliss. If you're like, I can do it. Like, we've always said in comedy, if someone came to you and told you exactly how hard it was going to be when you started like doing open mics, no one would still be in it.
Nope.
No, we'd all quit. We'd be like, oh my God, What? I gotta do open mics in front of drunks and
that's
like,
with everything, though, right? Especially
yeah.
entertainment. Like Brian, you know, someone asked Brian for whatever reason.
Brian Callen yeah, for firing the kid.
Right. Someone asked him about fighting. He goes, "Don't do it. Talk to Shab." I'm like, God, if someone told me that, I'd be pissed, man. I say, do it, try it. Who knows where it's yeah. gonna lead?
Sure,
because you never know. But that's with anything. With any job, it's all fucking tough. Dude, stand up, move.
Yeah, who is anybody to say to somebody, don't do something? Yeah. I mean, look, if my nieces were now seven,
My nieces are seven.
If like in 8 years they're like, I saw this cool job in Van Nuys where you get on a blow up mattress and you play with yourself and they give you cash, I'd be like, fucking,
probably not.
We're shipping you to Alaska,
yeah.
and you're gonna fucking hunt moose,
yeah.
and you're gonna become a lesbian.
to a certain extent, like, for sure, get your education, but then after that, go wild, man.
Yeah,
you'll figure it out.
Did you? Who were your mentors? Parents, brother? Did you have coaches?
In
life,
overall?
And also like as you're coming up, because I want to kind of segue into like this next chapter of life. Once you got like found comedy and stuff,
sure.
but like you have stories and experiences for days, and yeah. I'm just trying to like reel in all my questions.
I hear
like,
you, man. You fire away. You guys got me as much as you want.
Okay,
I love
cool.
you guys.
So, who is, because you seem like you've had a strong head on your shoulders, like, since day one,
yes.
you know? But, like, I think we all need somebody that's, like, you know, like, for me, it's my mom, as far as, like, somebody I've always been able to check in with and, like, shoot me straight and, like, you know, definitely be a yes-ander to, like, what you're doing, but not an enabler, not,
yeah.
like, and also tells you, like, you know, gives you both sides of the spectrum
yeah,
and,
yeah.
like, lets you kind of make your choices.
Sure.
So who was that for you?
My dad, you know, I grew up super strict. He was super strict on me because he always wanted the most for me.
Mm-hmm.
So my dad, my brother, you have an older brother, and he works for me now. He has his own job. My dad and him are freaks, brainiacs. My brother works for Microsoft, computer programmer, but also my tour manager, merchandise, runs our website. He's a beast. So growing up, my brother and I, he'd beat me up all the time, like to the point where we had to go see therapists, and it was super bad. Like, he had fucking issues. Like, he was like the good son, like Macaulay Culkin.
Oh,
he was super dark. Super, super dark. We couldn't figure it out.
Yeah,
I mean, pretty good family. What the fuck are you doing, man?
Yeah.
So he's constantly whipping my ass. And so we weren't that, like, he always had my back, but we weren't crazy close growing up.
Mm-hmm.
And then in high school, again, not that close. And then once college started to happen, we got really close. And now he's by far my closest friend. Like, we're so fucking close. It's not even funny.
Amazing.
You know, he keeps it more real than anyone. You know, I'll get off stage, you know, whether it's fighting the kid or Big Brown, or what'd you think? Like, not your best. All right. You know, he's like very,
wow.
very,
family,
very upfront.
You
so
know?
My brother, my dad, and then my Uncle Pax, who recently passed away. You know, you're talking about a guy who played, I just wanted to be like him. He played football at Cal. He boxed in the Olympics. Seven-time Mr. Universe.
Damn.
We call him Mr. Venice. He passed away of cancer, but, you know, he's a freak. And then also happens to be Yeah, I think it's fair to say he's close to being a billionaire. He was at the time he passed away, you know. So you're talking about a real pioneer. The reason why I run long distance, when everyone told me, oh, you're too big to do it, he would set long distance records. Like, he set a long distance record racing this boat from San Francisco to L.A. Like, he's this beast. So I saw all the
Jeez.
Stuff he accomplished. And then he also, you know, this is some crazy shit. This is what kind of dude he is. Pax, he came out with the Tupperware for, like, cottage cheese and yogurts. He created a machine to make that fat. And just got stupid rich from it.
No
stupid
kidding.
Rich, yeah.
Wow. So
you want to talk about stories? And a lot of stories. You know, my dad's a good storyteller. My Uncle Pax, who rest in peace, but he tells a story where, you know, he's the ladies' man, and he's playing high school football in Oakland, and he's this big wig. You know, he's getting recruited by Cal. He played football at Cal.
Yeah, yeah.
And he's dating this girl, and she's in the shower. They just got done having their business.
Mm-hmm.
And he answers the phone. It's a dude. And he goes, can I help you? And he goes, yeah, tell Irene Clint called. And he goes, Clint who? And he goes, Clint Eastwood. And he goes, all right, Clint. Hangs up the phone. They had the same side chick. So him and Clint created this weird.
He was Eskimo Brothers with Clint Eastwood.
Yeah, but him and Clint, because they're both from the opposite side of the bridge in Oakland,
yeah.
create this weird kind of rivalry where they're fucking the same chicks all the time. So they would see each other. It was like
it's
game
like the
on,
Jets
man.
Versus Sharks over
yeah.
pussy.
Yeah, it was great.
Oh, my
man.
God.
He had the best stories ever.
I mean, if you're going toe-to-toe with Clint Eastwood in anything, that's
a good company to be.
Yeah.
He was the best. So my dad, him, and my brother, those are the three that really keep it real.
That's
man.
Amazing. And so I mean, I know that you kind of get into the UFC through The Ultimate Fighter, but yeah. When is that even, like, how did you get involved in that show?
God, man, I was, I took my first fight, I knocked the guy out in like 36 seconds, and then two fights after that, all knockouts in under a minute, and then I was training with Rashad Evans, George St. Pierre, Shane Carwin, like the who's who. And they go, man, you know the next Ultimate Fighter is heavyweights. You'd be great on that. I'm like, I need some more experience.
Because they hadn't done heavyweights until then.
The very first season was heavyweights.
Okay.
And then this season, 10.
Yeah.
And this is heavyweights. It's the biggest season ever. Like Kimbo Slice, Roy Nelson, like the who's who.
Yeah.
Rashad Evans, I didn't know this. He was a coach for that season, and I was training with him. And he goes, dude, you'd be great on there. And I go, I feel like I need more experience, man. He goes, not that's what the Ultimate Fighter's for, guys without experience on it.
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe. And then literally the next day I get a call from the Spike producers. They went, hey, we saw some tape on you. We'd love for you to fly down to Vegas and meet with us. And they were having tryouts all around the nation. I skipped all that shit. They flew me right in. I walk into this meeting. It's with Spike at the time. It's in Vegas. There's this huge boardroom. You know, I'm not used to Hollywood at the time. There's a huge boardroom. All these decision makers. And they're interviewing guys to see who would be good on the show. And one of the guys starts picking on me, like, because I'm small for a heavyweight. So at the time, I was like 230. And he goes, oh, this isn't a light heavyweight, son. This is for heavyweights. And I hear it, and I'm like, but he's in a suit. I don't know what he's doing.
Yeah.
And then he keeps, and I'm trying to talk to this lady, and he keeps doing it. I'm like, what the fuck are you doing, man? I went, listen, I don't know who you guys have seen. And this brought like the bad Brendan on me. I went, I don't know who the fuck you guys have seen. I will destroy anyone you guys bring in here. Anyone. I'm also the best guy you can have on the microphone. Whatever you guys are looking. If you don't pick me, your show will fucking suck. And the lady goes, thank you. Have a good day. I went, fine. Don't pick me. And walked out. My agent called me literally like a second after, like, hey, you're on the show.
Oh, shit. That's amazing.
But, I don't know. How long do we have?
Oh,
at least another hour.
Yeah.
Perfect. I'll give you this. Check this story. I don't think I've told this story.
I also need to know before we get into all this, like after this, I need to know, like, even just like how you got into fighting, like playground, like how,
never.
Yeah. All right. We'll put a pin in all that.
Okay.
But tell this story. Yeah.
So the Fertittas, who owned the UFC at the time, own all the Palace Station casinos in Vegas. So when you fly out for the Ultimate Fighter, they put you in one of the hotels for holding. So there are 16 fighters that they selected. The night before you go into the house on Ultimate Fighter, you have to stay in these hotels. You would think they'd put you at Red Rocks or MG, one of the nice hotels they own.
Sure.
You know, they put you in Palace Station, which is behind the strip, where it's like full of just degenerates and homeless people. Like, not good.
Right.
But they, and it's so over occupied that they put us in this weird like outhouse thing. Like all the fighters in the outside. And so they sit you, they go, listen, you can order any of the room service you want. I have to take your cell phone now. You're not going to have your cell phone for the next 8 weeks. That's a show. You can't have cell phone, reading material, nothing.
Yeah.
So she goes, we're going to take your cell phone. She goes, I can't emphasize this enough. Do not leave this. If you leave this room, you will be kicked off the show instantly.
Jesus.
If you leave this room, and we're putting tape on that side of the door. If that tape breaks, you're off the show. I went, why the fuck would I? Who the fuck would leave the room? Of course I'm not leaving the room.
Right.
She goes, you got it? I went, yeah, cool. Whatever, ordered chicken salad. I'm eating, watch TV in my room.
How tough was it to go no phone for 8 weeks?
Not too bad because I knew the mission.
Yeah.
So I'm sitting there and I fall asleep. And it's two in the – this is a ridiculous story. It's 2 in the morning. I'm in my underwear. And next door, it's paper-thin walls. It's ghetto as fuck. I hear a guy and a girl talking, and he's like, nah, bitch, you're going to do it. It's a black dude. He's like, nah, bitch, you're going to do it. And I'm like, am I a dream right now? And I hear – boom, and he smacks her. And I'm like, oh, hell no. I'm not going to put up with that. Like, is it? And I hear, get the fuck off me, Jermaine. Like, they're going, she's shouting back and forth. I'm like, holy fuck. I'm like, I'm going to go fuck this guy up for this girl.
Yeah.
Hopefully get my dick sucked after this.
So
I get out of my bed, and that's, I'm like, I'm going to fuck this guy up, and I'm going to open my door. I'm like, they'll understand this. And I hear another dude go, nah, fuck her, man. Let's kill this bitch right now. And I hear, ch-ch-ch. I'm like, oh, shit. Oh, that's a fucking gun.
Yeah.
So I start army crawling in my underwear because I'm like, straight bullets. So
yeah.
Like, I don't want to die, man, but to hit a fucking TV show, make dollars. So I'm fucking army crawling. And I'm like, God, what if I fucking leave? Am I kicked off the show? And as I'm army crawling, I get to my door. It's pitch black. And they're still arguing. And I go to open my door not to make sound. I hear him go, hold up. Someone's there, dog. Someone's next door. And I go, fuck this.
Oh, God.
And I fucking sprint as fast as I can out the door. Through the lobby, they have this on camera, through the lobby, through all the producers are playing blackjack, they see my big ass go, and I go straight to security. I'm like, "You, some girl's about to get killed, man. There's a gun. It's two guys. They're smacking around. They're about to get killed." So like, "Which room is?" I'm like, 217, but I'm in like the weird outhouse. They're like, "Show us." So I'm like, "All right, I'm in my boxers, no shoes, nothing." I'm walking with them. They go, "Which one?" They go, "Go in your room, man." And I go, "No, I'm not going to my fucking room." They're like, "Just stay here. Identify them if they come out." I go, "I haven't seen them, man." So they get them. The girl, it's what's going on. It's two pimps. She's the prostitute.
Yeah.
And she, you know, she's like, "Oh, fuck." She starts fighting the cop. The most gnarly looking pimp I've ever seen, just fresh out of prison. Tattoos all on his
tattoos.
Neck,
what color was
chains,
the suit?
Fucking just not, had a wife beater on.
Yes.
Oh, okay. Looks and goes, "I see you, white boy. I fucking see you, snitch. I'm coming back, motherfucker. I'm cut. Wait till I get out.
I'm going to get you,
goes,
sucker."
He goes, "They're not going to press any charges. I did nothing wrong. Wait till they wait till I get back out. I'll be back out in 3 hours, motherfucker." I'm all, "Oh, shit."
"So I got time to finish my chicken salad?"
Dude, they take them away, and he goes, "Have a good night, man. Thanks for doing that, but, you know, this is pretty common." I went, can you put me in a different room, though? There's no other rooms. So the next one, I have to go down to fight and fight to get in the house. So I'm sitting there all night just waiting for this dude, like, "What the fuck, man?"
What?
They never came the next morning.
Kidding.
Like, "Shab, you know, your tape was broke." And I'm like, look at the camera. I swear to God.
Check the replay.
Yeah, they checked all of it. They cleared me. Went in the house. Fought like 3 days later. Won my fight. It was crazy, man.
Wow.
That's insane.
Insane, man.
Couldn't give you another room.
Nothing.
Couldn't give you, like,
didn't give a fuck.
And you're like, "Oh, yeah, the freaking neck tattooed pimp is going to come back, and you're keeping me locked down."
Nothing.
In the exact same area?
They Dude, did not care.
I thought... I've, like, seen some shit by being on a New Kids on the Block concert cruise and playing Wolverine at Universal Studios. You crawled under bullet fanfare and almost getting killed by a pimp and the prostitute.
I was trying to be a white knight. See what happens?
Dude,
these hoes.
They're not loyal. I hear that.
These hoes are not loyal.
Are those types of experiences, like, I mean, I'm sure you've got, like, pages on pages of experiences like that. Like, how often are ones like that, like... Are you reminded of, or like, or that you like pocket away for being like, "Man, when my kid's old enough, like, which one's gonna be the go-to?"
I don't know. Yeah. I don't know. I just think of them like I'm like, I just, when, you know, it's rare you think back on your past. Like, I'm so busy moving forward. What's next?
We forget so many of the experiences we have, and then somebody else, at least in
when
my
you guys
experience,
bring it up. I even talked about the Ultimate Fighter forever. So we brought it up. I'm like, "Fuck, the Ultimate Fighter." The house, I have stories about the house, but that was what I remember most. I'm like, "Fuck, remember?"
Oh, yeah,
that
sure.
Pimp?
Yeah, I was getting
remember
killed by
pimp?
A pimp.
Remember when you almost didn't make it? I killed by the pimp because trying to save the chick,
dude.
That was a bad idea,
dude. That's when like you hear things go on if you're sleeping in your bed in whatever neighborhood and you hear noises outside, you're like, "You know what? No."
Yeah, this is why my brother goes, "This is why you need to keep your ass in your room." He's like, "Fuck whatever anyone's doing. You're too nosy, trying to be Superman." I'm like, "I don't know. I don't know what to tell
Wait,
you."
Wait, so you go into the house after that?
Go in the house where it's 16 dudes. You're fighting, you know, the last two earn a contract.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's three fights in the house. You have to win all three fights to get to the finale.
Yeah.
And I ended up getting to the finale.
Against Roy Nelson.
Earning my contract. I had three fights at the time. Roy had fucking 30, former world champ. I had no business fighting him. Most commissions wouldn't sanction that fight. Roy's a phenomenal fighter, by the way.
Dude, Roy Nelson... For anyone not familiar with fighting,
me,
there's
so
Google
much.
This man.
I know a handful of guys, you being one of them, and then but I had to like go back and like YouTube a lot of your fights
for
and
sure.
Like, dude, I mean, already had the utmost respect. Now I'm just like, man, I gotta fucking anytime I'm in even a remote amount of danger, I gotta have fucking Brendan Schaub on speed.
Call
dial.
Me, man, unless it's a pimp.
That's your kryptonite.
Yeah. Is there a pimp?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's my only thing.
God damn it! Why?
That's
yes, there is. Yeah,
that's my thing.
Because Roy Nelson. When you see Roy Nelson, the word athlete never enters your brain when
that's
you see Roy
that's
Nelson.
That's fighting though.
Because he's
is this
about
the,
six.
This is the belly, the big belly dude.
Yeah, he's what six. 2, 6'3", maybe
6 foot.
He looks like Rod Beck, the old reliever.
But then he's got the belly. He's got the facial hair. But dude is like dude is the definition of
quick fat.
Yeah, quick fat. Your old nickname.
Yeah,
like, quick fat.
Yeah,
he's one of the best knockout artists of UFC history.
Yeah,
he's ridiculous.
I mean, it's,
now what's the difference between a knockout artist and a Subway sandwich artist?
Not much.
Yeah,
not much.
Both are slinging that salami.
Both knocking it out of the park.
Yes. Especially if that bread's stale for a few days. Oh, man. That can get hard. That can knock you right the fuck out.
We watched that clip. Is that, I mean, you have a lot of amazing highlights. That, I mean, and is it also one of those things where you can't even talk about it because it's
get knocked out?
Like a non-flashback? Yeah.
No, I don't have a problem.
Well, I want to hear both sides. Knocking out and like getting knocked out.
It feels like a different lifetime. Like, when people bring it up, I'm like, dude, remember, like the other night, they had one of my fights playing on Fox, and I was watching, like, who the fuck is that guy? Who is that guy?
That's going to be weird.
It's so weird. But then when I see it, I remember what I was thinking. I remember that week. And
you go right back to it.
Yeah, I'm like, oh, and I shut down. I shut down. But
wait, why?
It was so intense, man. I'm not a natural born fighter. I'm not a mean guy. I mean, you can bring it up.
Yeah, you're the sweetest, one of the sweetest dudes I've ever met.
Dude, I'm not at all. I'm just not. I was just really athletic. I hit the UFC at the right time, so I got really far. I was ranked in the top 10. But
what would you do to yourself pre-fight to push sweet Brendan Schaub out of the way and channel the Recess King?
The Recess King was all good because it was football, basketball, baseball.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Fighting, it was like, I literally had to just look at it as a competition, and I would keep telling myself, like, just be the better athlete, like, do this, do this, do this. Mm-hmm. You're smarter than this guy. So I'd hype myself up that way.
It wasn't like a venomous, like, I need to go out for blood.
Fuck, no, never.
Some guys do that, though, right?
A lot, and they're pretty successful. Like, one of my huge downfalls was I didn't hate anyone I fought. Anyone I fought, win or lose, I'd go back in the locker room, talk to them, like, make sure they're all right. Yeah, they're like, what the fuck are you doing back here? I'm like, how you feeling, man?
Because some of them are so aggressive to hype. Like, I heard Ronda Rousey was quoted as saying, like, when I go out there to fight, I'm trying to turn vaginas into penises.
That's so
intense. Joking. No, she didn't say that. But like,
to your point, that's not something that would surprise me. Like,
really?
A lot of those guys are like that. But there's don't get me wrong, I have friends in the fight business, but all my friends are comedians, actors. Like, I'm not.
That's the best.
Yeah, but testosterone stuff doesn't. Even before, I never.
Yeah.
Like, I can't relate to that world. Like, they're like, man, I can't wait to fuck this guy. I'm like, huh? I'm dreading it. How many days away? You know, like, and I had a way bigger fight than those guys. I'm like, fuck, is it coming up? Oh my God.
So you would you befriend them before or after? You can't do it before because you have, that's just the competitive nature.
It was just a competition to me. Yeah. It's no different than football or running.
But afterwards, you had no problem being like, yo, man, good fight. Like,
wanna
grab a steak?
Literally, you name someone, everyone I taught, even Travis Brown, who we had our horrible issues before, you know, he's dating my former girl. And so I went to him back and I was like, damn, man, great fight. You know, I hope you didn't take any of that personal. Like, I was trying to sell tickets.
Were they thrown off when you were doing that?
You know, with him, I felt like he was just like, he was like, we're good, man, we're good.
Yeah,
I was like,
yeah.
But the thing is like, we went through this experience together. Only the two of us know what it took to get here. The two of us fought. You won, man. So as far as a fighter, you're the better fighter tonight. There should be no ego, no animosity. Like, you won, brother. Like,
well, then,
who cares?
Yeah. And then, and especially with fighting, it just seems like. That's why I love fighting, wrestling, anything like that, because it's pure sport.
Yeah.
It's pure, you know, there's no, well, his foot may have been on the line. It's no like, was that a foul? It's just.
It's pretty black and white. And comedy's not.
Yeah.
Comedy's not black and white.
No.
It's really not. Like, don't get me wrong, funny's funny, but there's different, like I said, someone might like your comedy, but hate his. So it's just, but in fighting, it's like, well, no. I punched him in the face. He got knocked out. It's very black and white.
He's out. I mean, now when, because you see all these fights and you see the lead up and you see the press conferences and the guys hating on each other. I mean, now that you're out of the game, how much of that is like, we got to sell tickets, and how much of that genuine animosity towards each other?
Before Conor McGregor came along, I'd say it was 100% real.
Wow.
Once Conor McGregor came along and changed the game.
Yeah.
For good and bad, but people realize how much money he demands now, how much money he's getting, how big of he's the biggest star we've ever had.
Yeah.
Now, like, I watched this press conference for the UFC World Tour, and everyone's trying to mimic Conor McGregor, and it was a shit show. I think it's bad for the sport because now guys they're forcing themselves to be these personalities, which they're not. They're just not in it.
They're
kind of
like,
it makes it look really gimmicky, man.
Yeah, it's trying to like force pro wrestling into it.
It looks like WWE.
Yeah.
And they're making these fights that are more entertainment than what should actually be done. They're going down a tricky road.
It's so funny because like it seems like wrestling. It seems like pro wrestling is trying to be more like UFC, toward they like try to make it real and have guys train do more quote unquote authentic moves. And then it seems like UFC is trying to be more WWE, trying to get flashier, and trying to have
characters.
They're
blaring the lines because Well, remember, Brock Lesnar was the first one kind of blared the lines. He was the WWE champ. He came to the UFC and he's an actual monster. And then CM Punk goes, that looks cool. I want to try that.
Oh, God.
Oh, God. You know, like, he went in there and got destroyed.
Yeah, because, like, if I don't care what kind of athlete you are, like, I mean, people forget, like, Brock was an NC2A champion. Like
freak.
Just
training camp, Minnesota Vikings, almost made the squad.
Yeah, like, just a genetic specimen. And then, so you can't be like, well, I've thrown a few punches. I'm a pretty tough guy. Like,
no, CM Punk, like, he's on that challenge show for MTV with, it's like the pros versus Joes.
Yeah.
He got destroyed by, like, the Joes.
Yeah.
He's just your regular dude.
Yeah, but he's a hell of a showman, and he's great on the mic.
Doesn't matter.
Doesn't matter in the UFC.
Does not work like that.
Doesn't matter. You get knocked the fuck out. So you think, like, now, like, Connor's kind of made everyone go, oh, I should do something like that.
It's a tricky road, man. It's not good. It's not good.
Yeah, but, like,
if you're a purist, it's not good.
Like, was anyone ever coming to you before your fights and being like, hey, man, can you, like, talk some shit about his wife or, like,
dude? Never. No. They didn't need to. Like, I always liked, like, the press conferences and building up the fight, and I always felt like if I was on the poster, I was, you know, screwed over. Like, I always wanted to be the focal point of the fight, so mm-hmm. I couldn't do enough interviews, and that's how I got good at podcasting, because before I got to podcast meeting Brian Callen, I did interviews for football. I did all these interviews for a fight.
Like, oh, no shit.
The PR team at UFC was like, Schaub's our guy to do interviews.
Dope.
Like, so I'd That's fly great. Out wherever and just do all this mic talk, radio shows.
And you loved it.
Love it.
Yeah.
I can talk all day. Let's go, man.
So when,
but then when they're like, you know, you have to fight coming up, I'm like, fuck.
That
You're
part.
Like, I like talking about it.
How about fight talking?
Yeah. How about debate? I just talk him out of it,
huh? Yeah. I'll talk him down. So
no, the first ever talk out of a fight in the ring.
Let me talk to him for a second.
So, like, when you go into the Ultimate Fighter house and you see all the cameras, is that you going like, oh, this is going to be fun? Like, the cameras didn't make you nervous at all?
That's a little different because it's a 16-man tournament. And uh-huh. I knew, like, I had to be so serious there. And especially when I got in the house, I knew that was my path to become world champion. Like, I in my heart of hearts, I thought I was going to be world champion, the best in the world. And that house kind of confirmed that, because I realized these guys mentally were breaking down in the house, not being around their family, not getting breaks. And yeah. I was flourishing. Like, it was tough, but I had a journal. Mm-hmm. I was having fun making jokes with the guys.
Yeah.
I'd go talk to Kimbo Slice. It was a great time for me.
Dude.
And I was winning fights. Like, things were good. And I knew if I just focused for those 6 weeks, you were kind of set up, man. So when these guys were bitching out, I was like, oh, my God.
Right. So you kind of flourished under that.
Yeah, I liked it.
And you understood, like, oh, this is entertainment.
This is my shot. But it's also my shot.
Yeah, because you get, I mean the people that have launched from that show all the seasons are just, I mean, hell, one of the current champions, Bisbing, yeah.
TJ Dillashaw, like, there's a lot of guys who are killing it. But now the show is a little different, but our season, biggest ratings of all time, but
well, I mean,
after season 14, it's really, the ratings suck.
Yeah, because actually your season is the last one I remember because Kimbo was in it.
Yeah.
So I was like, okay, I want to see if this YouTube sensation.
I think that's when I first started to really pay attention to UFC. I mean, I think I'd always seen, it's such a social thing, you know, to, like, watch fights. Like, people just, like,
it's a dude thing.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But that guy was, right, he wasn't a bum fighter, was he? He was
no, just a YouTube. Kimbo was like, he was a YouTube sensation. And this is my argument, and this might be way too much for your listeners than I know MMA, but
no way.
Kimbo Slice is on my Mount Rushmore for mixed martial arts because he I remember Kimbo when I was in high school, people were like, dude, you got to see this fucking guy beating guys up in these barbecues in Miami.
Yeah.
He's getting paid for it, and he loves it. And he has the you couldn't fucking draw a character that looked better than
nope.
a backyard. Like, he looked exactly how you thought of a backyard
right.
fight.
And also, exactly like if you were to say, like, hey, Kimbo Slice is going to be there. You'd be like, oh, that black guy with the fro?
Yes. Yeah, yeah.
Like, right. Large dude, gold teeth, chains, cute.
Muscle, wife beater. Like,
yeah,
he looked the part.
His right. style also seemed very unorthodox. Is that just me?
He was just heavy-handed. Like,
yeah.
He's exactly what you would write if you're writing a script, a mm-hmm. backyard brawler. From Miami, gold chains, gold teeth. So when he comes on the house and you get all these viewerships.
Yeah.
And I said this at we did a dedication episode because
yeah.
he passed
yeah,
away, right?
Yeah.
So I did this dedication episode to him for Spike. And his story never got told because in the house, they show a clip when he walks in. I thought they were going to bring in Chuck Liddell or someone world famous
yeah.
fighter because mm-hmm. Dana White walks in and goes, I don't know if you guys realize there's only 15 of you.
Mm-hmm.
We're gonna this next guy is coming in. He has something to say. And I'm thinking it's going to be Fedor. It's just some
sure.
monster. They're bringing Kimbo. The camera's panned to me. And I go, oh, fuck this guy. And that's how the audience knew me first. They went, oh, wow. Shab's saying, fuck this guy.
Yeah.
So I went, and it literally put in caption, ah, oh, fuck this guy. And so I just knew Kimbo from the YouTube video.
Yeah.
Right.
Then we're at the house. Kimbo is the nicest person I've ever met in my life.
What?
A family man that just doesn't do drugs, doesn't drink, just this. He was my go-to in the house. I would talk to him. He'd tell me these great stories.
And by the way, he used to work on porn sets, too. Like
still did. He was security for, yeah. for Icy Mike, who's his best friend in high school,
yeah.
who owns Reality Kings.
Yeah.
What?
So to me, that's
what is that? Night. I don't definitely haven't bought a password for. What is that?
Reality Kings? What is that?
Adult like the Kardashians?
It sounds like the show about the Kings of Recess.
Yeah. I mean, maybe.
different districts.
Yeah, but just to wrap that tough talk, but that was literally when I was like, oh, I can't judge a book by its cover.
Kimbo's
one of the best of all time.
Yo, there is a definite, by the way, backyard brawler. I mean, if that's not the name of the movie about his life. I mean, I feel like I'm only hearing a few details of it, but it sounds like, I mean, that's incredibly compelling.
His story's insane. If you wrote his story and sent it to Hollywood, they'd be like, this is, no one's going to believe this.
Yeah. I mean, dude, and people love these fighting movies. Why? I mean, that seems like that should, you should fucking tackle that for sure.
I imagine that someone's writing the script.
And the thing, now, did he have – now, your response of, fuck this guy, do you think that was echoed throughout the fighting community because they thought,
yes.
like, he was just,
yes.
like a fake fighter?
Yeah. So everyone went, oh, I like this guy's Shab. But then a lot of people went, oh, he's super cocky. Like, when I was fighting, everyone was like, oh, I don't like Shab. He's too cocky and arrogant. But mm-hmm. I'm not cocky and arrogant. You're watching a countdown show on Fox or wherever, on Spike – that I'm getting ready to fight Krokop, Ben Rothwell, Nogueira, the toughest fighters in the world.
Yeah.
I'm not going to be the most outgoing, friendly personality.
No.
I have to talk about fighting, and they're tossing these softballs up where I have to talk about how I'm going to beat him, what I think of him. You know, so that's where people are like, oh, Shab's arrogant. But I wasn't arrogant. It's a goddamn fight.
Now, I have a question because now you've been you're a comedian, podcaster now, fighter back then. Which fans were more annoying, comedy fans or fight fans?
Not even close.
What
it's
is
not
it?
Even close.
What is it?
Fight fans.
Now, is it just every time you go out, it's like you're not like are people challenging you? Do
never?
Okay,
no one's ever challenged me ever when I've been out. It's the vibe you put off, but also the fight fans like. For whatever reason, I guess because they see you punch guys in the face, they'll grab you. Like, oh, what's up, Shab? Or they'll punch me, and I hate being touched by people I don't know who does.
Yeah. yeah.
So
me too,
they
man.
Grab me, shake me, and it's so like oh, fuck, man. And it's so intense.
Yeah.
With comedy, especially podcast fans are the best in the world because they know me. They're literally down to earth. They know everything.
They've
about
hung
me.
Out in a room with you, essentially.
Yeah, it's all good. Like,
yeah.
It's not weird when you meet comedy or podcast fans. It's the best, man.
Oh, okay.
I do want
to
go back real
good
quick and then we'll transition. But so getting knocked out versus knocking someone out.
So it's all the same. So like when I knocked out Krokop, you really
I've never seen a like that shit's crazy to me, man. Like it goes,
it's like the sweet spot. Like literally, you don't
like a rag doll.
You don't even feel it. You don't feel nothing. Just it feels right. Next thing you know, he's out.
Are you trained?
Knocked out. You don't you remember just a little speck of it, but you don't feel anything. You feel nothing.
Really?
No.
Wow.
You wake up and it's like, what happened? Ah, fuck.
No, because so you almost shot. Learn the results of the fight.
Oh, you have no idea.
After it happened.
Yeah,
you're like,
you have no
wait,
idea.
Did I win? Oh,
yeah.
I didn't?
It's
oh,
like
shit.
Tommy Lee Jones hit you with one of those Men in Black things.
100%.
Because they had the camera over you as you were on the ground. They took your mouth guard out, and then you kind of looked like somebody just told you that Mary-Kate and Ashley Olsen were two people.
For real.
You know?
You're really like, wait, what happened?
You're like, Michelle Tanner's one person, right?
Yeah. Michelle Tanner. Yeah. No, for real.
Do they train you on the sweet spot of like.
No.
No. You just, it's.
Shit happens.
Yeah, because, I mean, now when they say, like, some guy got hit right on the button, is it, like, literally just, like, you can tag someone in the right spot and then just they're out?
Behind the ear, the temple, really, you know, the jaw, the people think that you hit them in the jaw when they say it has a weak jaw. It's not that. It's the snapping of your head that knocks you out. It's the brain snapping.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay, so you're
like
almost...
if you punch someone directly in the forehead, it's going to fuck your hand up.
Yeah.
On the face, it's usually the you know the jaw because you want to snap their head or behind the ear. Like right behind the ear is a sweet spot.
No kidding.
If you just hit yourself behind the ear, you'll get dizzy. Just barely do it.
For me, it's under the knee and right inside the dick hole.
Somebody see there, it's out.
For fighting and for pleasure.
Game over.
Okay, so you said, though, that you didn't have any... there was nothing about adolescent Brennan Schaub that was like,
like you didn't get into fights like at the playground or like I'll meet you in the parking lot at five.
Never.
You fucking put like
never
none
if,
of that.
If you would have did a poll of all my friends and family growing up when I was 10, if they said, "Hey, Bren's gonna be a UFC fighter or the next president of the United States," I would assume most of them would vote president of the United
States. Wow. That far.
Never fighting. Never.
Because I would say like what percentage of like Kimbo Slice and Conor McGregor, these guys like probably did have some of that in them at an early age. Yeah.
Yeah. They grew
the guys
up,
who were.
Yeah. They grew up a little rougher. They grew up fighting, you know, like, mm-hmm. you know, I didn't grow up privileged. You know, I got in some fights. I grew up with an older brother, but never, never. Yeah. I was really scared of fighting, man. And I had a big brother where if you mess with me, good luck with him. He's the fighter, not me.
Now
you're going to see a goddamn therapist at 12. Not me. I was flourishing with friends, having a good time.
Now you say
catching
you're
footballs.
You say you're so timid to, or like, you know, somewhat like apprehensive to like, to do it, like saying like, I'd rather talk out of it. But like, now that you've been through all of it, do you feel like if any situation comes your way, you're like, oh, I'm going to, I know how to handle my, like, I might not want to engage, but I know that I'm like, almost like in stand up, like the more you, gigs you do, that sure. like the bigger the venues you get, you go, oh, cool, it's just a, it's just another gig.
Yeah, that's fair to say. And I don't really think about it. I think more I realize that, let's say we didn't know each other, we got to fight outside. I know if I punch you in the face, the repercussions of it. I know if you fall down and hit your head on the ground, I've seen that. I know if I kick you in the face, what's going to happen. I know if I choke you out, what's going to happen. So,
you know, if you kick me in the dick hole, I'm going to laugh
and come,
and cry. I told you that's my sweet spot.
So I think I'm just more aware. Like I've seen these repercussions. So yeah. I'm way less likely in a fight than anyone else.
Yeah.
I know if I punch you, we might both be in trouble because I might break my hand. You're going to break your jaw. You're out for 6 months. I have to go to rehab. I have to get surgery. I don't want to deal with
that.
Because you cut me off? What's wrong?
By the way, if we could stage a fight in my apartment, that would make me look so cool in front of my landlord.
Yeah,
and she's this Polish lady that is not happy with me right now because I smoke a little weed in here and I have pool toys on my balcony, which you're strictly prohibited against.
Yeah. I mean, but like, so, and also, you know that if you get into a fight, then whatever judge is going to be like, oh, you're a trained weapon, you should know to like.
But also, as a grown man, who gets in fights these days? What the fuck? I got a kid, man. You know, I don't have time for this shit. Also, you would have to slap my girl or my kid for me to fight.
Well, that's what I was going
to
say.
Anything else, like, it's not happening.
Yeah.
For what?
Well, in
the legal battles and all that shit.
Right. And because you know
that you're a celebrity and it's like that shit, like, people, like, you know, there are dudes out there that, like, will purposely, you know, bump into you at a bar just to fucking, like, oh, what are you going to do? Punch me in the face, Brendan Schaub, so that I sue you and make some cash? You're like, dude, you had that scripted out.
Shit.
You
know? There you go.
Yeah.
Now that you mention that, definitely.
Yeah. I mean, as your stock rises, I feel like that's, you know, dude, I mean, I just hear about that from other
I've never friends. Had a problem. I also don't go out. Like, you know, I really, I go to dinners, but I'm never out. I don't drink.
And you're out places are comedy clubs and people are in a good mood and want to see you. And they're not trying to.
I'm around, surrounded by friends.
Yeah.
Because like
Callan will fight someone before me.
Really?
100%.
Well, I mean, he
has something to prove, I think.
Yeah, he'll do it just to prove himself. Like, sure, I'm 50, but I'm still limber.
Wilkin. That guy just asked for your autograph. Yeah. Like, he's just dying to get it out.
Now, when you're in the UFC, you always talk about like I see in the NFL, they always have like the players getting in trouble, and in the UFC you have what's going on with the John Bones.
Yeah.
And like, did they have any classes to teach you like, hey, this is how you don't fuck up? Like, do they
they had like and they just had it recently, they have these things called the athlete's retreat.
Uh-huh.
Where it's basically so the UFC can check off like, see, we told them not to hit girls and do drugs and crash cars into poles and fuck strippers. You know, we told them. It's literally a 3-day retreat just so they can check it off. But at the end of the day, also, as much as we want to glorify this, say, hey, it's just like the NFL or NBA, like, it's a sport. They're fighters, man.
Yeah.
And if you look at the domestic violence, and listen, I'm a guy who sticks up for fighters, but you look at domestic violence and the statistics of domestic violence in mixed martial arts compared to other sports, like, there's an issue. You don't get into fighting because you're really good at throwing footballs and, you know, and doing other things. You get into fighting because you have no other options.
Mm-hmm.
B, you actually like to fight, which, you know, says a lot about someone.
Yeah.
C, you know, you grew up with a super rough background and it's all you know. You know, like, fighting, you know, fighting. It always will be fighting.
Yeah, and do guys just have that switch and, like, once it's flipped?
Like,
I don't think that's fair. I think, you know, whether, you know, take a guy like War Machine, who's kind of the poster boy of being fucking morons,
right?
You know, for him to hit Christy Mack, I don't know if you've seen Christy Mack's work, but how dare you?
I would agree.
Star Christy Mack?
Yeah.
You know this story?
I know it. For I'll briefly summarize. There's a
Brad knows every porn star story there is.
You damn right I do.
Well, this one's good.
Yeah, like Christy Mack is this tattooed porn star. She's great, and then she ended up dating a fighter who's legally changed his name to War Machine. Maybe not the best idea there. And
based on what?
He's a War Machine.
Okay,
look at him. And apparently he was hitting her, and that was bad. And then one night in specific, he just went into a rage and sent her to the hospital.
What?
And now
he tried killing her.
Yeah, he tried to kill her. And War Machine got convicted, and now he's like going away for God knows how long.
He's like 12 life sentences because killing and all this stuff. Yeah, it's intense.
When they
yeah.
give life sentences that are like 12, that's, I mean, isn't it like, hey man, how about four? Like either, how about one also?
Well, why keep going? Like after life, we got it. But then they come back the next day and it's, you're in prison for 178 years.
I mean, at that point, it's almost like are you trying to set a Guinness Book of World Record for the judge being like, you know, I shouldn't have, like they're at the fucking Tilted weird? Kilt and he's like, I shouldn't have got away with a guy for 400 years. Yeah. Like that's fucking crazy because it's also impossible.
Yeah,
he's like, that's how fucking I roll, man.
Well, unless he's a Buddhist and then he like comes back and he's reincarnated. And now it's like, okay, when you get reincarnated, we throw that guy in prison now.
Yeah. That to me is the only rationale. Because why would you go longer? Like, if they're 50 and you're like, you're going away for 100 years. Yeah, great, man. Again, 35 is probably sufficient.
You mean life? Like, why do we keep doing this? Isn't it weird?
Yeah, just say life until they die. So, yeah, good.
But
he's
my point is with War Machine, whether it's not fair to say, well, he's a fighter. This is how they roll. If War Machine did anything, if he worked at Kinko's, if he was at Starbucks, if he was in the NFL, right. NBA, he's that guy. That's a trait. It's not fair to say that trait's with fighters.
So you just think
that guy's an asshole no matter what he did.
Yeah, these guys are angry and they're aggressive and they're more likely to do stuff like this, but it's like they just found the right sort of avenue to where they can get paid with that aggression.
I guess, but also, you know, if a trained fighter hits someone, it's going to show up a little more than if your barista at fucking Starbucks slaps you around.
Yeah.
You never had any of those jobs, by the way, did you? Like
I was a janitor when I was 16.
What?
At Albertsons. Yeah, we talked about this.
That's
a
right.
Bit,
we talked about it on your podcast.
I was a janitor.
We didn't get too deep into it.
No.
Because I could talk Albertsons literally, and I've never said that sentence before, but I could talk fucking Albertsons for a long time. No. How long were you there again, though, for?
About a year.
Okay. Yeah, see, I was there for 4 years, but a year is enough time to soak up.
I did a year stretch.
What was your favorite part about working at a grocery store? Other than
I was a
up.
Janitor, man. Oh, you know what? The free magazine and candies.
Yeah,
it wasn't supposed to be free, and one of the reasons I got fired. But to me, it was free.
Me too.
Yeah.
Actually,
I just assume like, well, you're not paying me that much.
Yeah,
I
like, fuck you guys.
I can at least take a Tiger Beat or whatever the hell you guys are reading.
Tiger Beat, nice. Let me catch up on Andrew Keegan and fucking Jonathan Taylor Thomas.
But also, it was mine was was a union, so I get my paycheck it'd be like $7 for the week. Like, dude, union took $67 this week.
Isn't that
what
crazy?
The fuck? I'm 16.
I can't survive on this
shit.
Yeah, that's why I'm stealing fucking fruit pies and deodorants.
I'm not going to meetings.
Yeah,
like I don't care.
Weird, man. That was a terrible job. Terrible job.
What? Now, I don't think anybody. And I mean, what is the day in and day out of a janitor at a grocery store? Like, you go in, they say, "All right, man, here's the mop. Like, look for shit." Like, or
well, no, you got to mop the entire place. But then also,
it's a big store,
the big ass store. 6 a.m. You got to pick out the cigarette butts out of the cigarette ashtrays.
Oh yeah,
all the ashtrays.
Oh god,
you gotta clean the bathroom.
Mm-hmm.
3-4 times a day. It was horrible.
So, pretty safe to say you probably have a housekeeper now. You're like, I'm not doing that shit anymore.
Yeah. Hashtag rich as fuck. Yeah.
By the way, you texted us at one thing. I feel like you're a big hashtag guy.
Yeah.
But hashtag professional.
Yeah. Hashtag professional.
Yeah.
You sure you make the podcast? I haven't missed podcasts in 5 years. Hashtag professional.
I love
Wait,
that.
So janitor, and then that was, and then after that it was.
That, and then, you know, college football and college, you have those odd jobs.
Yeah, yeah.
But I was
also
Division I football player, so you get your per diem, stuff like that.
Fuck.
Man, now, when did you know at your fighting career, like, I'm done? Like, when did you know, like, I can't, I'm out?
It was kind of, you know, whether you believe in a higher being or not, it was kind of like, I've seen all these signs. So you know, I met Brian Callen. We decided to start doing a podcast. I didn't know what podcast was until I met Brian Callen. And, you know, we just started doing it once a week. Mm-hmm. And then I was fighting at the time, and it was good for me to get stuff off my chest, just talk about life. And then...
How'd you know Callen prior to this?
I was a coach on Ultimate Fighter 14. They brought Brian in to make the guys laugh. And he was from L.A., and he was like, come to my show tonight. And I was like, man, I don't know anyone in L.A. I'm actually moving there next week. He's like, where are you moving? I go, Venice. He goes, I'm in Santa Monica. Take my number. And so...
Friendliest guy ever.
Friendliest guy ever. Yeah. Loves fighting. A little too obsessed with it. I was like, God, is he gay? So I had his number, and I drove. I sold everything in Colorado. Drove to L.A. I'm in this house. Sitting there, I just start crying because I have no friends. I love being around people. I have no friends. Fuck. I don't know anyone.
Dude, and people don't realize starting completely fresh is terrifying.
It's the most scariest thing.
For anybody.
Yeah. So I didn't know what to do. I started crying. I'm like, I got to figure something out. So I text Brian, like, hey, you around? And answered way too quick. Yeah, what's up? I was like, Jesus
Christ. Yeah, why? Are you crying?
Yeah, why are you crying? You need me to come over to your 25 Avenue? I'm like, Jesus Christ. And he goes, let's
go. How are you texting in your voice? Yeah, I don't understand how that's working. Yeah.
And so I met him for coffee the next day. And he goes, hey, come over tomorrow, meet the family, man, and let's do a podcast. And so I went on the Brian Callen Show.
Yeah.
Seven listeners and not doing well. And
need a little shop upgrade.
Need a little shop in his life. And we had this weird chemistry. And he goes, man, it went really well. People dig it. We should do one together. And I didn't know what it was. And, you know, the rest is history. But we started doing it in his house. And I go, what are we going to call it, though, man? He goes, let's see. Well, I'm the kid. You're the fighter. And he goes, we'll call it the fighter and the kid. I went, well, the kid, you're 44 years old, bro. And he goes, yeah, that's what they call me, the kid. I go, who calls you the kid?
Well, I call myself that. Yeah.
me and people I demand.
Dude, after he was like, oh, that's just what they named me on set. Pan, like, a few years later, I go, who the fuck came up with the kid? He goes, I gave myself that name. He goes, no one calls me that. He goes, I actually got it from an old movie.
Well, in that case, my nickname is Big Dick Midget.
Right? Okay? Yeah, just roll with that.
I'm just going to demand, so from now on, the About Last Night podcast is Big Dick Midget and the Jew.
You can just do whatever you want. Yeah, so Brian and I started the podcast, and then I was training full time, and...
And you were
just slowly, like, this podcast slowly started gain momentum, and then all these things happened that gave me a voice to talk about on the show, and then...
And you're not doing it you're just doing it for fun, because it's like, I made a buddy, and it's like...
I'm not making any money, I just want to meet Brian. We're doing it out of his garage at the time.
It's something to keep you busy.
Yeah, it was cool to hang out with a friend, I didn't know anyone, and then walking through the airport, and people are recognizing because of the podcast, and... I had this big sponsor offer me all this money to walk out in their sponsor shirt. And I'm like, well, no, I made this Fire in the Kitchen. It says Epic Candy Fight Club, because it was like Chris D'Elia, our mutual friend Chris, Will Sasso, Brian, myself. And we were sitting around at dinner, and we're like, what are we going to call it? You know, what's our click name? I'm like, well, what the fuck? Why do we need a click name? Just, let's hang out. And then I was like, oh, because Abbott Kenny, we always stroll Abbott Kenny Fight Club. And I made these shirts, and that was kind of our thing. And then people loved it. So I turned down this money. I was like, oh, this is going to be funny. I'm going to do it for my friend. So I wore it out to the fight when I fought Matt Mitrione. I wore an Abbott Kenny Fight Club shirt. And then on my sponsor, like the big banners. The fight was on last night. You see a giant, the Fighter and the Kid podcast. It was the first podcast in the UFC.
Wow.
Yeah,
wow.
So I just was like, I don't want the money. My friends, they're going to love this when they see this.
Yeah.
And then it just started to take gain momentum. And then all these signs were pushing me like, dude, quit fucking fighting. Yeah. Do this.
Yeah.
We started to monetize the show. And next thing I know, I looked at my paycheck for fighting this guy compared to the things I was doing in entertainment. I was like,
way less bruises.
And I had no desire to be in TV or comedy doing stand up.
Did somebody, was it Callen that kind of was like, all right, man, like super comfortable on the mic, like you've been on the stage?
Callen, probably a year after meeting him, I was like, hey, I'm in training camp, come to camp with me. So I'm getting my hands wrapped, and he's seeing I'm fighting, I have to spar this huge monster where if he knocked me out, he got an extra $500. His goal is to knock me out, and he gets $500 if he does it.
Yeah.
And he walks in and goes, who the fuck is that? I go, that's my training partner, man. He goes, you have to spar him today? I go, yes. And he's like, what the fuck are you doing? I'm like, you're the worst right now. Never come back. And I was telling a story in front of all like the my coach and stuff like that. And Brian goes, "Hey, you know you're gonna do stand up, right?" I go, "You're fucking crazy, but I'm about to get knocked out. I can't do stand up." He goes, "No, I'm telling you, one day you're gonna do stand up." So we all laughed at it. And then he had the idea to do the Fireman Kid live, a live performance. Because I go, a live podcast is going to suck, man. And he goes, "I know, that's why we're going to do a performance." And then before our show, it was in Ontario, in Ontario or Irvine, I forget.
Okay.
Sold out show. Brian goes, "Hey," and this is literally 3 days before, he goes, "We're going to start the show. I just want you to go out there by yourself. We're not both going on. You go out by yourself. I just want you to tell a story." You're great at telling stories. You can do that. I go, "Yeah, I can tell stories all day." He goes, "Yeah, let's do that." Pan year later, where it sold out theater in Chicago, Vic, and I look at Brian and go, "Hey, what do you think of my story?" He goes, "Oh, you're set? You're worried about your set tonight?" And it's literally, you know, right before we're about to go, and I go, "Set? No, my story." He goes, "Oh, Bubba, that's cute. No, you're actually doing stand-up. I just want you to shit your pants. You're actually doing stand-up, man." He goes, "Don't you see everyone's laughing at your stories all the time?" I go, "Oh, shit." And just this light bulb went off, and then did more of that, big crowds. And I get back to L.A., and someone from the Comedy Store texted me, goes, "Hey, how would you like to do it?" Because I did a live Finding the Kid at the Comedy Store, sold out. Someone saw and goes, "Hey, how would you like to do a set tonight?" And my heart just dropped. I was like, "Oh, my God." I was like, "Really?" And you could tell in the text, like, "Let's relax." Yes. "You just got 5 minutes. Let's relax.
Why are you sending me hashtag heart you?"
Like, I was freaking out. And it was the lady from there. I called her and I was like, "I can't thank you enough. This is amazing." And she's like, "Dude, you did a sold out show here. Fucking chill out."
But also at the same time, that's your fans. And that's your, like, it's the Fighter and the Kid. That's your people.
That's my flavor.
Yeah, to go up in front of people that maybe don't know who you are or aren't familiar with you and just hear Brendan Schaub.
My first set by myself is in the belly room, and you know, D'Elia's there, Rogan's there, you know, Sasso, Callum, jeez, they're all hanging in the wings there. I'm like,
And that's a small room, so that's not like they're hiding. Like, you can see them, you can make eye contact. I see Chris with them. Go, "Here we go."
You know, Chris, brutal. I love the fucking guy. But, you know, all of them were just like, "No, man, it was good," especially for the first time. Like, we started open mics, you started fucking hair. Like, right? This is cool.
Yeah, now, how do you, how's that? Like, knowing that, like, because I mean, there's, you know, you're still putting in all the work and doing a lot of spots, but it's like you're not doing open mics, right?
No. Yeah. I don't get it wrong. No, I jumped to the front. I CM Punk my way into this thing. Like, I jumped to the front of the line, you know, and I'm very aware, and I'm sure certain comics have issues with it. Come see me if you do, but I'm sure certain
unless
comics,
you're a pimp.
Unless you're a pimp, then let's just talk about it. But no, I'm sure they do, and they have every right. Like, even I have guys hit me up all the time. I have this guy in New York who's a former football player, and they're like, "Man, I'm doing stand-up now." And I cringe when athletes go, "I'm doing stand-up." And I go, God, dude, I hate that. And like, who the fuck am I? But I cringe at when people go, "Hey, Blake Griffin's doing stand-up." I go, "Oh, God." Because I know that they're not doing stand-up. What they're doing is they're not putting the time, and they're not doing any of that. They're doing these live shows. Someone wrote some material for them. They get up. I see how it works, and they're reading off a script. You know, that's not real. So I get it. So for me, you know, and going back to like the Comedy Store, is if there's a if someone said, "Hey, what's the most special place on earth to you?" It'd be the Comedy Store. It really, to me, it's crazy. It's so special to me, man. Because it literally, I wrote the, it's on my cell phone. I wrote it down at, like, the date, my first belly room stand up. Like, that was such a big deal to me as a kid with Adam Sandler and Jim Carrey. Like,
dude,
that was such a big deal to me, man.
I can't even.
I have the most respect for the, don't get me wrong, I love the Laugh Factory. They've given me a huge opportunity.
Totally.
The Comedy Store to me, dude, it's fucking magical.
I think everybody has a experience with those clubs, but like there is something about like that club. I mean, that just is on another level. Something about the three rooms and the way it's set up, and like for whatever reason too, I feel like I, and maybe you're the same way, like knew more of, like, heard more stories before I even got into it about Jim Carrey
100%.
And Jay Leno and Letterman and Pryor and Robin Williams being at the Comedy Store.
Yes.
They were all at the other ones too, but the store was like. And also just the name and like Mitzi Shore and the way that I just heard more stories in Kinnison. There was just a lot more history. And then same thing, man. It's like I worked phones there, and like the first open mics I did were there. The first bringer shows I did for the first 2 years were there. And so now to be doing a show there and to get your name on the wall, which, you know, the more you're doing it, it's going to happen. And then that's going to be fucking mind blowing. It's like, it is cool that there is one place, because the other clubs, like, don't have that nostalgia factor and that history factor. Like,
I agree 100%.
I mean, the factory has that thing out front again, you know, with the people's pictures on it and stuff. And that's dope. But it's like, I don't know, Brad, what would you say about the store that it's just like that?
There's just a feeling.
I mean, that's why I really got to know you at the store. I mean, it's like there's...
It's like Lambeau Field for football. Like, it's like Green Bay.
Totally.
Like, it's just like this fucking place,
where
you can feel, like, you can feel the history. You can feel the legends on the wall.
Like Jim Carrey, you saying, like, knowing when I first did a main room spot and... The only thing that was going through my head was, I'm on the same stage that fucking Jim Carrey, like really started to become Jim Carrey on. And I couldn't get that out of my head.
Oh,
and
I'll start crying. Like, if I'm about to do a main room show, I'm in the back, and if someone goes, dude, how crazy, you're up here, Jim Carrey's, if you wanted to get me to start crying, so if someone mentions that, and I realize where I'm at, I'll start crying.
All right, well, you're doing my next show, and so I'm going to say that for sure,
dude,
right before you go on stage.
But what's crazy is, before I started doing any performance, I saw Dane Cook... it was either Left Eye, pretty sure it's Comedy Store. He did a set at the Comedy Store. I paid tickets. I was in college. I came here with my buddies. Didn't have much money. I watched Dane Cook at the time. You know, Dane Cook.
Sufi.
No, big as it gets. And the other night at the Comedy Store, and it went Dane Cook, myself, Rogan. I was sandwiched between them.
Whoa.
And Dane Cook introduced me. And I was like, I grabbed the mic and I was like, get your shit together, Brendan, because I felt like crying, man.
Yeah.
I really felt like crying. And he gave me, like, I've heard all these stories about Dane Cook. I'm like, what? He's a bad guy. He was so cool to me.
Yeah,
and he gave me the best intro I've ever had in my life. And I got on the mic.
He's a great
dude, literally
man.
Hugged him and went, I love you, man. Like, straight up.
Yeah.
Like, you're one of my heroes.
Yeah. Man. It's one of the best parts about this business in terms of comedy where, and I tell people, once you get past, like, the open mic level, you're equals. Like, you're all going to the same spots. You run into everybody. A guy like Dane, who can sell out a basketball stadium, still has to go up at the clubs.
Got to put the work in.
Got to put the work
Doesn't
in.
Doesn't matter.
And so, like, in that way, to see, you know, Seinfeld go up at the Comedy Cellar, the same club where these other guys are going up, it's such a cool experience knowing that you're sharing all these moments with your heroes.
Yeah, I agree 100%. And I think... You know, I did the comments from all this stuff, and I don't know. It's just special place, man. Yeah. I'm so honored. Like, I'm a little, you know, I get a little bit in my head. I'm like, God, what am I doing back here with all these freaking monsters, man? Like, this is weird.
Yeah.
You know, a little bit.
But guess what, man?
But I'll tell you this,
that's
too.
A healthy mindset, because that's just going to fuel the fire for you to wanting to keep just hitting the pavement and getting better.
I'll tell you this, too. You know, granted, I've jumped to the front line with the Comedy Store, Laugh Factory, sold out theaters in Australia, all that shit.
Don't brush over that. That's fucking crazy.
But the comedy community, the comedy community has embraced me like you would not. Some guys give me shit, but I'm telling you, man, more so than any football team I've been a part of, more than any UFC team I've been a part of, the comedy scene has literally embraced me. They give me tips. They book me on shows. Like, there's not a lot of hate there in their hearts. Like, the comedy people, that's why I've always been drawn to them. It's such an exclusive, like, family atmosphere. And I had an issue the other night, an emergency at the house. I can't tell you how many people called me, checking in on me. And I've never felt the love, man. It's
awesome.
This is what has been missing my entire life.
Well, it is a crazy job, and it's such a, like, shared experiences to where if anyone sees me in an airport or comes up and goes, like, Brad Williams, I've got walls up where I'm just gonna kind of be nice, but then work to move them along.
Yeah.
But the second they say I'm a comic too, walls down.
Yeah.
Walls down.
What's up, man?
Let's hang. Let's talk. We got some time between flights. Let's go grab a bite to eat.
It's a club.
Yeah.
Like, it's this weird like Fight Club, you know?
Where
you guys understand what it takes to get up there. Like, I did a set a while ago at the Comedy Store, and there's this girl up there, and I could tell she was so nervous. She was the first one to go on.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the main room. Comedy Store sold out Thursday night. And she comes in the back, and I see her just, like, sitting there breathing. And I was just looking at her, I'm like, God damn, I know how that goes. Like, fuck. Like, it's an experience, like, it's the same as when two guys get in the octagon and fight. Like, you guys share this common fucking experience that only you two relate to. And it's hard to talk to anyone else about it.
And
so I saw that comedian just there. She was so relieved, and it went well. And I'm like, good for you, man.
That's what's so amazing about stand-up, too. And I feel like, I mean, I'm sure we can all attest, like, how fortunate you feel that, like, we somehow got into it and are, like, into it now. Because... A, it can, you know, make a shitty day better, but it's like the constant grind and challenge of it, like, it never stops.
It's a painting you're never going to finish.
Like, there's, I mean, you know, like...
I like that.
Yeah.
I like that.
That is good.
It's painting literally a painting you're never going to finish.
Yeah.
Never.
Unless you're Bob Ross. You will finish it in 15 minutes.
And then we know. And then maybe.
Maybe.
But then you got to start a new one.
Yeah.
Then you got to start a new one.
Yeah.
Then you start a fucking new one over and over.
Now, you know what I'm saying? Like, there's every, like, even tonight, it's like Brad working on his third hour, and it's like headlining his hometown club in Bray, and it's like, I'm sure you're going in, going like,
it, man.
Man, I know what I'm doing, but like, there's also like, you're still knowing like, no, I'm still trying to get it
yeah.
to where I'm happy with it.
And also I'm nervous because it's hometown.
Yes.
So it's like, I know. I'm
and that never goes away. And that's awesome.
Nerves. Yeah.
Cause that's going to make you raise your game. And it's like, like you say, when the fun goes out of it, like, and that's what's so great about stand-up, I feel like, is like the challenge and the fun are kind of like always meeting
there.
Each other.
Yeah.
Now you have like, you're starting to do all these, successful live podcasts, and the Fire and the Kid podcast is just a monster.
Yeah.
We've both done it now.
Dude, I haven't gotten a response from me on a podcast like that ever. Dude, I mean, it was
your
like,
fans are insane.
Fire and Kid Army is relentless.
Dude, it was amazing, dude. Yes.
We love them, and if they're listening to this one, sure. Thank you for making the jump. So when you have all that going on, what makes you want to start your own then? The Big Brown...
Big Brown Breakdown?
Big Brown Breakdown. Okay, which got that right.
Yeah, it's tongue twister, right?
It is.
I wanted to change the name, but the fans like, no, don't you dare change it. The Big Brown Breakdown, it started with, you know, man, I don't know how to get into it. So with Brian loves fighting. Brian loves fighting, but Brian's not an expert on fighting. So I put it like this. So if Brian knows politics, mm-hmm. but if we were going to have if Brian and I had a podcast on politics, and every time Brian was getting balls deep in politics, I went, what's a Republican? And he has to restart at what a Republican is.
Yeah.
He's never going to get to the nitty gritty that the diehard fans like, dude, break down Whitaker versus Yoel Romero right now. But before I do, Brian goes, God, look at the biceps on Yoel. Like, I'm never going to get to the point. You know, so I was like, man, do we add an extra fight in the kid? Or, you know, I still love fighting. Like, my love for fighting's come back as far as analyzing it. So, and there's, as far as MMA media, most of them suck, man. So I knew I could do well in it. Mm-hmm. I have a really interesting perspective. I did the fights. Also, I'm my own boss. I don't have a producer in my ear. I'm going to tell you like it is. So I knew I could make some headlines, get there with my perspective. So it came from that. I'm like, you know what? I'm just going to do this one-man show and see how it goes. And freaking, you know, that show's averaging 1 million downloads per episode. You know, so it just fucking kills it, man. And then,
it's insane.
And then my manager goes, I had goals for 2017. I wrote them down in October. And I go, I'd love to do a one-man show. Mm-hmm. Don't get me wrong. I love doing it with Brian, but I'd love doing my one-man show. That's my goal. 2017, even a small show, you know, at the ISS or whatever. It was cool. And, you know, within, I don't know, I did a one-man show a little bit ago, and it sold out in like 30 minutes.
What?
And then it just keeps going. The next thing you know, I'm on this Australia tour, and I sold out theaters. So I don't know what's going on.
That's now... When you're a guy that doesn't come, like, you're in the world of stand-up now, but that wasn't, like, your bread and butter for the longest time, like, does the concept that you just sold out a theater, like, do you even process that?
Or no, like, because I feel like Charlie Sheen doing the Dragon Bloods, fucking, you know what I'm saying? Like, the Tiger Bloods.
Yeah,
like,
I remember
is this
that.
Thing going to crash and burn?
Yeah.
Like, you remember he did, like, his first Detroit show sold out.
Yeah.
And he gets up there, and he has no material. It's not working.
Oh, yeah.
And the second one, he almost got lynched. Like, he was screwed.
Well, yeah.
Dude, think about Kirk Fox, who was opening for him. Do you know Kirk Fox?
No.
Comedian.
No, you know, I met him.
Yeah.
Good guy.
And he opened for Sheen on those things, and he says, dude, like, he came out and people were booing him. He couldn't get through material. And then Charlie came out just to say, like, no, give him a chance. He's a good guy.
Yeah.
You know? And then
I'll come out and say, winning.
And then people went nuts when he came out. And Kirk was like, yeah, it almost made it worse because he kind of came out for a second.
And that lasted not a long time.
No. Well, dude, that's not what's happening with you.
No. I'm ready to go. I would never let anyone down. I put in all the work. I'm just saying, like,
it happened so quickly.
When my manager was like, man, we're getting a lot of requests for Australia. Like, they want to come to Australia. And I don't even, to be honest, I don't like to travel. I hate leaving LA. I love LA, man. I can do comedy store here and do all this
Come
stuff
on.
Here, work
yep.
on stuff.
Yep.
So you should go to LA. And I go, all right, well, show me what it'd look like. And it's these theaters. I go, well, let's not forget the theaters. Put me on like Baskin Robbins or Outback Steakhouse. Let's not do that. He goes, well, this is the tour that they want you to do. I went, all right, man. And I was like, well, I'm going to sell like 30 tickets. So embarrassing. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't even think I'd sell out the Ice House. We'll sell out right, left and right.
Because if you don't sell a certain amount, would they just pull it, right?
I have no idea how it works.
It's just kind of humiliating when you you're in a theater and you look out and it's half full. You're like, eh. Like even though there's 800 people there, if it's not sold out, yeah,
I feel bad. I just don't know how to deal. Like that to me, that's rejection.
Yeah.
Like what the fuck are you doing?
Yeah. Yeah.
So, you know, in a day, one of the theaters in Sydney sold out, and so they my agent emailed and was like, "Dude, I told you." Like we have, he goes, I won't mention names. He goes, "We've sent these three comics there. You've sold more tickets than any of them in 3 days than they did their entire, you know, campaign."
Wow.
I'm like, "What the fuck is going on here?"
Now is that
it feels fake to me?
Nah, dude, that's why this business is so great, man. It's flimsy and uncertain, but like, dude, when you got a good thing, you know, people respond, and it's like, dude, you put in the work with the pod and this show, and it's, dude, things happen unexpectedly.
And then, so are these live shows? Is this a one man show? Is it stand up? Like,
it's one man show, yeah. So it's about 45 minutes of stand up, mm-hmm. and then I go into current events, MMA events,
yep.
and that's all improv where I'll get into stories about. So they'll bring up a fighter, and I'll critique what he's doing
or cool.
the situation, but then I'll relate it to my life, and I'll tell some of the bunch of stories that I have.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, who's doing that? Nobody.
Yeah, no one's doing it. And I'll fly into the night before the big fight and do it at a theater there or something like that. So, and then I do open it to fan questions. That's where I have fun. Because the fans are smart and they're like, hey, tell us about. And then I'll go into all these stories, man.
Wow. That's cool. And, you don't hold anything back. I mean, they ask
nothing. They can ask whatever they want and they know that. It's an open book and I have so much fun.
Well, are the fans, is it a specific demo or is it like
18,
male, female?
18 to 36 male.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Is the predominant, you know.
You probably got to be getting some ladies out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Good round of ladies. Never mad at that.
The best.
Never
sure.
mad at that.
Because I know Rogan is like, I mean, he's very much dominated by the dude market.
The dude market.
That comes out to him, which I'm sure he's, you know, loves, but I mean, it's just that UFC fear factor.
Yeah.
I mean, they are just fucking.
Testosterone. Yeah.
Roided up. Yeah.
No, I don't get a lot of that. I get a lot, you know, I get. There'll be hot girls there, but they're there with their man. And a lot of times, like, I've showed, like, dude, you can fuck my girl, bro. I'm that big of a fan. I'm like, God damn, that's aggressive. God damn, I would never do that. But let's do it.
Yeah.
No, just kidding.
But here we go.
Yeah, see, I want the Brendan Schaub demo because right now I have, like, Brad and I, like, I have strictly rabbis coming to my show, and Brad has candy store bouncers.
All candy store bouncers. Large market, surprisingly.
I
no idea.
Yeah, the guy who manages the sweet factory at the Beverly Center.
Exactly.
Loves Brad.
Brings whole family. Have you been to Australia before?
Never. I don't like to travel, man. I've never been to Australia.
Oh, shit.
My schedule there, too. Like, people are like, dude, because I've always wanted to shark dive. The way they set it up, I have no time to do anything. I go
city,
Brisbane,
yeah.
Melbourne, Sydney, Auckland, Sydney. Like, I have zero time.
Oh,
like,
man.
Fuck, man.
And you don't want to add a day?
I won't see a koala. No. I won't see anything.
I mean, what a fucking. That was the most adorable thing I've heard a grown man say.
Yeah. I'm not even going to get to see a koala. Fuck, I come fly out 22 hours
dude,
or whatever
come
the
on.
Fuck it is.
Well, can you somehow arrange? If you're selling out the fucking theater, can you somehow put in your rider, like, I want peanut M&Ms.
I need a koala in the back.
And I want a koala in the back.
I need a koala in the back. I walk. It's just a koala chill.
Love it. Do it.
They email me earlier. You go, hey, so what do you need in the green room? I said, just coffee, almond milk, stevia, and I'm good. That's literally all I need.
What's stevia?
It's like sugar. The green artificial sweetener, like the health
action. Yeah.
Other than that, I'm good, man. You give me coffee, I'm simple.
And a koala.
And that, I'm going to email right when we're done. This one's going to sting a little. I need a fresh koala at every show.
Fresh
and,
koala?
Hey, and don't give me that same fucking koala.
Yeah, don't give me those expired koalas.
All cities.
New koala. I'll feed him. Now, our... Like
I'll feed them.
You're running around so much, like, because they always say like Australia has the most animals there that can kill you.
I know. I can't wait. I won't see them, but that's badass.
Yeah. Like what? Like so you're not nervous about like running into anything like that.
Well, like the Australian people are like, dude, I don't know, because I keep posting all this stuff that can kill you in Australia.
Yeah.
That's I keep posting like, way to go Australia. Like some guy goes, bro, check out what my doctor found, and it's a crocodile and a shark crossing paths. In this like fuck in the ocean, like a saltwater croc and a big ass shark, literally just going by each other.
I post that
on Instagram, like, well played, Australia. So people are sending consy things that can kill you.
Yeah.
But then the dude's like, dude, you realize you're in, like, the major city. That's like going to fucking California and someone be like, dude, there are grizzly bears. I don't fucking see one out here
That's
in Hollywood.
True. Yeah.
I have a question. What would be more terrifying for you to run into in Australia? A killer kangaroo?
Oof.
or a kangaroo dressed as a pimp.
That pimp kangaroo don't fuck around. I see that pimp kangaroo, I'm freaking out. All right,
if that's not a cartoon that we're pitching, and when you get back, pimp
that
kangaroo.
Pimp kangaroo.
Yeah. I mean, come on, man. Pimping a pimp kangaroo? He's pimping out koalas to all the wallabies? Why not?
This has been amazing.
Yeah,
thanks,
dude,
for making time, dude.
Yeah, man. Thank
this
you, guys.
This is, you're
you guys are two of my faves, man.
I mean, likewise, dude. It's cool to get not only new blood in the comedy community and someone who's like bringing something fresh to the game, but also we all feel like we have security now. And
that's, which is pretty
unless
sweet.
You're a pimp. Then, you're I a pimp. Can't make any promises. I'll do my best. I always told Brad I didn't think you liked me for the longest. I don't know why either.
So cool.
I don't know why.
Dude, we briefly got into that on
someone
your podcast.
Someone might have said something.
Same hairstyle. I don't know.
I don't know what
I feel like, and I will say this for you, but I feel like I give off the same vibe that we are two of the nicest people.
Yeah.
Because I have no
super
beef.
Friendly.
I just like, I love this, and like I try to, Brad can attest, right?
It's my own insecurities, I'm sure.
Well, it's also, I mean, also we met in like a tiny ass hallway, and it was like, for me, I'm all about like the timing of like saying what up and meeting somebody for the first time that you already feel like you know from listening to their podcast and seeing them around. And so it was like that tiny ass hallway, and like fucking you're towering over me, and it was like, what's up, man?
My
and it was
dick's like, in your face.
His dick was in my face.
Now you know how it feels, you son of a bitch. Every day of my life, one dick goes in your face. You freak the fuck out every day.
Oh my God.
That was just a weird night because Joey Diaz was being weird with me, and then I met you. It was weird. All no, good, man. Best. We're best buddies now.
And here's how I know that you actually like me is because after I did your podcast, I got a lot of your fans. Apparently on your podcast, I was calling you Brandon like the entire time.
That's my pet peeve.
What? And so I apologize.
Oh,
and like, and all the fans were like, I'm surprised you didn't toss that motherfucker.
Like, how dare you call Brandon? Like, Sam Tripoli just learned my name was Brendan. He'll call me Brendan, and then I was doing his podcast comedy story. He's like, listen, Brandon. I'm like, God damn it.
Did you correct him?
No.
See, and that's.
I don't want to embarrass him. If we're on air, I don't want to embarrass him.
Yeah. So now, I will say on this podcast, A, I apologize, and B, thank you to your fans for pointing that out
now,
to me.
And instinctively, I want to call you B. Is that like what people.
We're good with that.
Yeah? But also, I feel like I need to. Like, that's.
No, we're good.
You can't throw the nicknames too early in a relationship.
Now
you
we're
gotta
there.
Build that rapport.
We're there.
I love
we're
that.
We're there.
What other nicknames do you have that you like and don't like?
Big dick fighter. Hates that one.
You know, most people like Shob, Shobby, Bren, B.
Yeah.
There you go.
Pretty standard.
That works.
Is that what you got like growing up too?
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah. Most of my family and close friends call me Bren.
Bren?
I haven't heard it in a while because I don't go back to dinner.
Oh, but yeah, but then if you call him B, then what the fuck am I?
Oof.
Oh,
I call you Braddy.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, or B-dubs.
B-dub is cool.
I refer to you as that.
B-dub is cool.
Isn't it?
I mean that would be my pimp name. Does that scare you?
Oh.
By the way, real quick before we wrap this up, would there and could there and will there ever be a dwarf UFC fighting ring competition?
There needs to be!
Yeah.
There needs to be.
Brad loves wrestling and fighting so much.
I want in. First fight, I'm challenging Wee Man. Okay? Me and Wee Man in a ball pit of Chuck E. Cheese. I'm going to fucking own this guy. I'll do some push-ups. I'll chase chickens. I'll do whatever I got to do.
Can I be honest? If we put that together for charity, I feel like shitlet of money would be raised.
I agree. I feel like it'd be a hit.
I'm so in.
In a ball pit?
But it's a tag team. Then you guys can tag off the regular people.
I got regular people.
Dude, you are my partner. I'm calling
yes!
it now.
I'm in. Who's Wee Man have? Like Johnny Knoxville?
Yeah, exactly.
Fuck him up.
Preston Lacy, the fat one?
Yeah.
You got this
maybe
shit, dude.
Bam. I feel like Bam's crazy.
You got this shit, dude.
Yeah.
We got it.
All right, that's
unless
happening.
Unless he's a pimp. I right. don't want to know.
And then
I'm calling Chuck E. Cheese
then,
tomorrow.
You're Brendan. I'm Brad. The tag team, the Killer Bees.
Yeah.
We got the name.
Oh my God.
Yeah. We got the name.
You guys wear bumblebee outfits?
It's going to happen.
The Beehive. Welcome to the Beehive.
That's it. All right. Good night, everybody.
Show. That's the show.
Thanks for listening to the About Last Night podcast with Brad Williams and Adam Ray. Boy, they're a lot of fun, huh? Why don't you subscribe on iTunes to this fucking podcast? Give them a 5-star rating so this midget and this Jew can feel good about themselves for a couple minutes. Also, get on your iPhone or Android and get the podcast app. You can also listen to it on Stitcher or aboutlastnightpodcast.com, where you can hear past episodes with great guests like Lisa Kudrow, Paul Feig, Kevin Nealon, Bob Saget, Dion Cole, Chris D'Elia, Adam Devine, Michael McDonald, Jaleel White, Bud Friedman, Steve-O, Harlan Williams, Tom Arnold, Ron Funches, Rick Glassman, Blake Anderson, Anders Holm, Jessime Peluso, Joey McIntyre, and many, many more. I'm Tony Danza. Thanks for listening to the About Last Night podcast. Good night. That's it, right? You got it? Sweet. Boy, it smells good in that booth, by the way. What kind of candle is that? Hanukkah Willow? Nice.